Then we'll come back to order. Reports from standing committees.
February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 75, Environmental Protection Agency Actions 2, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Anderson, 02, Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate Joint Resolution 1, Regulation of Carbon Dioxide Emissions, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Anderson, 02, Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 42, Electrical Licensing Installation of Light Bulbs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, Hicks, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 28, Post Conviction Actual Innocence, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 85, Trespassing to Collect Data, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Hicks, and Schiffer. No, Senator Escobel, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 84, Child Support Payment, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, Senate File 30, Compensation for Persons Exonerated Based on DNA Evidence, has an appropriation in it. I would request it be redirected over to committee number 1.
Without
two,
objection?
Two. Or we'll take it again and do even better. Either one. Whatever.
The Senate number, the file number again, please?
It's Senate File 30, Mr. President.
Okay. Without objection, Senate File 30 will be re-referred to committee number 2, Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, privilege of the floor.
Yes, you may.
Mr. President, I'd like to direct your attention to the north balcony. My Valentine of 44 years is sitting there, and she's the one that made the turtles that we all distributed today.
Huh? We didn't? The committee report? Okay, we have a little glitch, Senator Schiffer. We had not actually read in the report concerning Senate File 30 yet. So when that does occur, then we'll have to ask for it to be re-referred. Well, thank you for the turtles. I hope they weren't modeled after your husband. Sorry, but it's Friday. Senator Nicholas, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that we go back into committee the whole.
You all heard the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We're back into committee of the whole. Senator Hastert.
Committee of the Whole will come back to order. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 16, Insurance Guarantee Association Model Act. The reading clerk, please read the bill.
Senate File 16, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, Insurance Guarantee Association Model Act, an act relating to insurance. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard a reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The board to do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 16, Insurance Guarantee Association Model Act. Now, Mr. Chairman, this is a 47-page bill. It is overwhelmingly the exact same language that's being adopted in states throughout the country. I believe 39 states have adopted it. And it's important that the language be exactly the same because this bill is dealing with how we protect policyholders, people that have life insurance, health insurance, disability insurance, some, in certain circumstances, types of annuities. This protects those policyholders when their company becomes in financial trouble. And that's why, that's one of the reasons why this has to be uniform, because you see companies have connections across state lines. So that policyholders for, you pick a famous insurance company that provides life and health insurance, those individuals are in different states, Mr. Chairman, and to treat them fairly in an insolvency situation, each state has to have authority to reach, to come to conclusions about how those customers will be protected. And this is really a pretty neat deal. It's amazing. And it's existed in Wyoming since 1990. That's the Life Insurance Guarantee Association. And basically, as a requirement of being licensed in Wyoming to sell life and health products, that you have to belong to this association. That means you commit to back up in the case of insolvencies. Now, you've heard the Corporations Committee present other bills where we regulate the financial, we keep careful watch, I guess, Mr. Chairman, on the financial conditions of insurance companies, because it's a pretty big deal. And you think it's a big deal in life and or in property and casualty insurance, in the health and disability area, it's as big a deal as it gets. And it's as big a deal as it gets because there are big changes happening in the life and health insurance area across the country. And there are major, major big companies. And when major big companies get in trouble, perhaps because of changes in the market that they didn't anticipate or investments they made that didn't pay off or what have you, throughout the nation, the Association of Insurance Commissioners, through this Model Act, which is in all different states, and through the instrument of the Insurance Guarantee Associations, which all the insurance companies belong to, we protect the customers in all those different states. That's what this bill does. It sets up a way to make sure that if I live in a certain state and you live in another state,
we're both covered, even though when that company that we have insurance from goes belly up. So it's very important to have the exact same language so that we don't leave holes in the coverage. Say Utah had a slightly different insurance guarantee act, and Wyoming had one. And then we had customers in Wyoming from a company that was domiciled in Utah. It could leave a gap in the coverage. It could leave an area where a Wyoming person wasn't paid or their policy wasn't backed up. That's the reason for the uniformity. So, Mr. Chairman, this is a National Association of Insurance Commissioners Model Act. It is 47 pages long, and I don't think I'm going to go through it. But I'll tell you, a Corporations Committee has been through it twice. It's the same act that's been throughout the country. One important thing that it does is it increases the aggregate coverage for people's policies. It raises it from $300,000 to $500,000. And you could have that happen. You could have a situation where you bought life insurance from a particular company, and you were visited by the salesman later, and you bought disability insurance, and all of a sudden you passed the coverage limits of before. So this has not only coverage limits on individual policies, but also coverage limits on the aggregate. Just by way of telling you kind of the nutshell of what this act does, I'll read two paragraphs from the act. This act is intended to provide coverage to a person who is a resident of this state and in special circumstances to a non-resident. In order to avoid duplicate coverage, if a person who would otherwise receive coverage under this act is provided coverage under the laws of any other state, the person shall not be provided coverage under this act. In determining the application of this provision, of the provisions of this paragraph in situations where a person could be covered by the association of more than one state, whether as an owner, payee, beneficiary, or assignee, this act shall be construed in conjunction with the other state laws to result in coverage by only one association. And so it's a partnership all across the country, states putting this same thing in and protecting consumers. Mr. Chairman, I guess you describe how this might actually happen. You have an insolvency that developed with an insurance company. Probably a bankruptcy court will declare them insolvent. The Guarantee Association steps in and takes over, and all the assets probably will go to the Guarantee Association, who maybe over time is able to put more money into the company to work out some of the situations, but will back up the policies and make sure that the policy holders are protected. That's how it works. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 16. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate File 16 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next Senator Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, privilege the floor.
You may.
Colleagues, I'd like to introduce you to some very important people, a number of them. Off in the North Gallery, I have Mike and Becky Easley. Mike is the CEO of Powder River Energy Corporation, the largest co-op in the state of Wyoming. Gives us all our power. Also sitting with him is Amy Castle. She is the executive director of the Wyoming Association of Student Councils. And off over here is Olivia Croft. And Olivia is the first Wyoming representative on the National Student Council for the past 20 years for the state of Wyoming. And she represents Region 4, which is Wyoming, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, North Dakota, and South Dakota. So for the first time in 20 years, please give them a big welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Senate. next bill for our consideration is Senate File 33. The reading clerk will read the bill. Do you want 16?
Senate File 33, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, County Board of Equalization 2, an act relating to ad valorem taxation. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Case, Peterson, Von Flader, and Noes, Senator Emmerich, Senator Peterson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with favorable consideration of Senate File 33. There are no amendments, and so for further explanation of this good bill, I would defer to the good senator from Natrona County, Senator Anderson.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, a little background on this Board of Equalization bill. Each Board of County Commissioners sits at the as the County Board of Equalization and hears disputes related to tax values on real property. These proceedings are quasi-judicial in the sense that the county commissioners hear evidence and testimony from the taxpayer and the county assessor related to the value assessed to the property by the county assessor. They also act as judge between the taxpayer and the county assessor. The case is essentially a mini trial. Parties are engaged in the discovery process of information. The taxpayer generally is represented by an attorney, as is the county assessor. 23 counties are conducting these hearings in 23 different ways. This bill would help clarify and will help to ensure that all taxpayers across Wyoming are being treated consistently as opposed to each county board doing it their way. This bill will also help cut down the level of appeals to the State Board of Equalization if additional clarity is provided in the statute. The Joint Revenue Committee has spent a considerable amount of time working on this issue over the interim and has received testimony from a variety of sources. I just have a few things to point out the components of the bill. Page 3, line 2, the 45 days give more time for any taxpayer to prepare information to present. For instance, certified appraisals may take up to 30 days or more, and complicated cases need more extra time. Page 3, line 16, the bill instructs the State Board of Equalization to adopt rules so all boards will operate in a consistent manner. Rules are developed with public input and are signed off by the governor. Page 4, line 11, the date for county assessors to make final decisions has been changed to October 1st to allow the extra time for final assessment determination. On page 4, line 3 and 4, the county attorney cannot represent both the assessor and the county board members, county commissioners, that is. They have different roles. It would be an unethical conflict for the county attorney to represent both parties. It's like a lawyer representing a husband and a wife in a divorce case. Mr. Chairman, they just can't do it. Page 3, line 21 allows for a complete record of the actions, so the information will be available to the board if an appeal occurs to the State Board of Equalization. And that electronic option was the most favorable thing in the whole bill, because there's counties that do not have the money for stenographers, and so they really like the electronic option. This bill brings the law and the statutes up to modern standards. Bill provides for more transparency by clarifying the process. Additional clarity of process will benefit every taxpayer. I urge you to give this bill a favorable vote.
Any other debate? Any further discussion? Seeing none, question been called. All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 33, please say aye. Those opposed, Senate File 33 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 45. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 45, sponsored by the Travel Committee, Game and Fish Department General Fund Budget Request, an act relating to game and fish. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, Kraft, and Driscoll. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 45. There are no standing committee amendments, and to further explain this bill, I ask that you call on the good senator from Devil's Tower.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, Committee 45 is a bill that deals with trying to help the game and fish. As you know, once again, we've lost a major part of their funding, and they've done about all the cuts they can do and hold their department in line with the thing, and the revenues aren't going to stay. So as a method to help get them whole and be able to keep it, because we're cut to the point now, they really can't go much more. There's two areas that really aren't very fair that are foisted upon the game and fish. And the first one is they pay all of their state employees and officials group health plan, all that is pulled out and paid by them, and almost all the other agencies that we have statewide, those are pulled out of the general fund, and we do that routinely, nonstop with them. There's a few of them that do pay that way. This would allow them to recapture that amount of money, which the fiscal footnote on that, I believe, runs a little over $4 million a year on the thing. And the second half is we forced them to manage grizzly bears. And they don't get to hunt them. They don't get to do anything with them. The bears eat a lot of stuff, and they tear a lot of stuff up. And the management on them is expensive. We really don't feel like it's fair, and I don't think the legislature should either, that guys that are buying hunt licenses have to pay for all the management of these programs. And so with that, we ask that they submit a budget and ask for the funds that actually cost what it costs to manage these grizzly bear programs. These two together will get the game and fish where a reasonable amount into the future they're going to be funded. That was what we were told in committee, is that this would get them beyond the next biennium probably. So with that, I would ask for your favorable consideration on the bill.
Further discussion? Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, I believe there's a committee of the whole amendment.
You want to move that?
I would like to have it read in.
Let's have that read in.
Senate File 45, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 45. I'll explain the amendment, Mr. Chairman, and then a little bit of the logic behind it. Very simply, what this does, it leaves in the bill the discussion on the grizzly bear and removes from the bill the group insurance. Mr. Chairman, and I looked at this, and my logic, and I'll share with the members of this body, this is a major shift in policy. And nobody supports more than I do the autonomy of the game and fish. And there was a bill last year that passed both bodies, and your Appropriations Committee, your Joint Appropriations Committee, had an opportunity to hear from both Game and Fish and WIDOT about a further discussion and analysis and presentation of their budgets. It was interesting to look at that and try to come up with the money that's spent, the money that flows through there, the federal funds, and they actually did a very good job of doing that. But if you start going down this road, and now we're going to do their employment insurance And the cost is about $10 million for the biennial budget. I worry about the legislature starting to infringe upon that autonomy. And what about the number of employees? I mean, we have no control over who they are. We do control their salaries. We have no say in the numbers. We have no say in what they do or their direction or their job description. I don't think we should. Do we start funding their insurance? What's the next step that we take? And pretty soon we're more and more involved in the management of the game and fish. That's up to the commission. That's where it should be. And I think this is the step that moves in that direction. Clearly we can talk about the separate issue of the grizzly bear and the state health or the group health insurance. And we have had a lot of discussion about if we're going to ask them to do things with general fund money, we ought to pick up the general fund. The thing about the grizzly bear that's obviously driven by the federal government, but at least if you do this, vote this up or down, but if you take this out, at least we can have a separate discussion about the grizzly bear. I just really worry about the cost. I worry about us getting more and more involved into the running of the Game and Fish Department. One last thing, Mr. Chairman. When we did look at their budgets, we did see there's a lot of federal funds that flow through this agency, and we know what they are. And they also have an operating budget that has about a $20 or $30 million surplus in that budget to help them offset. They're making great strides in trying to reduce their expenditures. I appreciate that. If you want to give them more money, obviously the way to do it is through their licensure fees increases, which hasn't happened. And this is another way to do it. I think you have a lot of unintended consequences, and I really worry about this major shift.
Further discussion on the amendment? Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I appreciate the Vice President's amendment coming. I appreciate his concern about game and fish. And as a matter of fact, I happen to be here when the first time that Game and Fish came before the Appropriations Committee for an oversight on their budget. And even though that came as a result of a bill that was sponsored by the late House member from RCLAS, and it turned out to have been a very wise bill on her part. It turned out it was, I think, quite good that we had the experienced eyes of Appropriations overseeing and looking at the budget of Game and Fish. But we also see, and they also got to see, the long-term pickle, basically, that Game and Fish is in. And when we first had the funding model that started in 1937, it was for the autonomy of the operation of Game and Fish. That's a good idea. We want to keep Game and Fish as non-political as possible. The thing that had the problem that has developed from that is, A, we've given Game and Fish additional responsibilities such as managing endangered and sensitive species and so forth, and the other that they really could not have foreseen at that time, and frankly I don't know that we could have, is what a mess healthcare has become for not only for individuals but for states and state governments. And we don't know how much this is going to end up costing the state in terms of healthcare. We don't know how much it's going to for their employees, for anybody else. The reason we went with healthcare, frankly, is because that is one of the non-political aspects of Game and Fish. They have, if you look, they have actually decreased, not for inflation or anything, they have actually decreased the number of employees they have by about 60 in the last 4 years. And they behave quite responsibly. But we don't know with the evolution, I guess you call it, of Obamacare or the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, and what's going to result from that and what kind of requirements the state's going to put on it. And the concern I have and the current concern that many of us have, that's why we brought this bill in the first place, is that this could end up crippling one of our most important agencies and one of those popular agencies among the people of Wyoming. Any other agency, if they're hit by huge cost increases in healthcare, which has happened before, they can actually go to the legislature and ask for and make it actually part of their standard budget for the next either supplemental budget or regular budget cycle. Game and Fish does not have that ability to do that. And so by moving healthcare over to from Game and Fish over to the general fund, A, it frees up more funds for Game and Fish to do what they want. It takes the pressure off increasing license fees. And also, allows the government to be more responsive to the ever-shifting landscape of health care for state employees.
Further discussion, Senator Driscoll.
Standing on and opposed to the amendment, we've had a really good discussion on about how we raise funds for them. The truth of it is, they only have one means to raise money. That's raise license fees. We didn't give them that authority, guys. We kept it for ourselves. We've repeatedly told them no. I mean, it's happened over and over and over again. And, you know, this is like we're trying to run a business and being shut off on your credit. And the truth is they're left with no means to raise money because of us. It's not because of them. It's because of us. They came to us, said, look, we haven't had any increases for almost a decade. We need help. The bills have come. The bills have been killed here. And this is strangulation of an agency by us. And, you know, we've seen some kickback on some other things we've done. If you want to see it, let's get the game and fish shut down and get all the hunters and sportsmen, get them where they hate the legislature, because it's us. This is going to be us. When we cut this funding and we make it go away, it's not going to be the game and fish they're coming after. They're going to be calling all you guys and say, you know, boat ramps are closed at Alcova. I can't get in. We can't do this. And these guys need to be funded. They've cut a substantial chunk out of their budget. They've took a bunch of money out, and now they're left stranded. And I can tell you, if we don't do this, the license-free increase died again this year. It's not coming over here. So with that said, we really, really need to take a look at doing this. Maybe we do it as a one-time deal and revisit it again. The other thing I will tell you, as far as we don't have control on the number of employees, we absolutely do. All you have to do is keep telling them no on license fee increases. They'll keep laying people off until we're down to where they either don't have pickups or don't have employees. I'd really encourage you, for the health of the department, to take a strong look at it or find a way to fund them something different, because we really, this is self-inflicted on ourselves, guys.
Senator Anderson.
Amendment. I too agree with the senator from Little Missouri up there. The game of fish has tried everything to raise the revenue. Any business, any agency, that's all they can do is do something to raise the revenue. We've taken that away from them. We've said, you have all the costs, but we keep control of the revenue. And it's interesting that we want to make that a non-political thing, yet revenue and those prices, those tags are a real political ball that we're throwing around. So I think we need to support them. We have a first-class game and fish, and we need to keep it that way. This amount that's in this bill will help do that. Thank you.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on and for the amendment. Folks, first of all, we'd be a little concerned if the game and fish went down and shut down Alcova. I don't think that their budget is running the reservoir. I think it's the parks and recreation that are running that. But with respect to the budget, there are budgeting obligations that we all have. And the game and fish are largely funded because of the way they asked to be funded. And part of what they asked was for autonomy. And they wanted the autonomy, and they wanted the independence. And if you give them the autonomy and the independence, comes with that is budgeting responsibility. It is bad budget practices to divorce the cost of making the decision to hire employees by saying, I'm not going to pick up the full cost of the employees. The people who make the decision on how many employees to be there, whether it be 1 or 10 or 100, should bear the entire cost of all that employee burden. And that forces them to make good decisions. And, you know, historically, if they need more, we have addressed increases in licenses, and perhaps we should do again. Now, it was fair game for them to come in and said, look, the burden of some of these you have put onto us, imposed onto us, other programs for managing species. And over time, we have said, okay, we'll take the entire cost of the programs and we'll pay for a program. But we've been very good on appropriations over the year to say, you must pay the whole cost of your employees and your program, Now, if they want to be brought into the general fund and treated as a general fund agency, we can do that. And we'll manage it, and they'll have to, if they want more employees, they come to us. But it would be like sending your child out and say, okay, you're required to be responsible, and you can go out and spend a dollar, and if you spend $2, here's another pocket for $2, and you don't have to account for it. All the cost and the burden of the employee should be borne by the person who makes the decision on how many employees to hire. And we have created a good mechanism for them to come back and make the Grizzly program is fair enough. That's a fair proposition. That is something that shouldn't be borne by us. Now, the non-hunters say, look, fair, if you want us to pay for it, the non-hunters, we might want to have some say in the management of those. And we might not want the Game and Fish to make management. Maybe we want to have somebody who wants to proliferate them at a greater rate. So the flip side of it is, if taxpayers are paying it, they should have some say in the management. But that's not the debate here today. The debate here is, if you want to get more funds for programs that you think that are non-general fund obligation or that should not be borne by the hunter, fair enough. But folks, the discipline of budgeting there's a discipline that has to be adhered to. And it is a little bit of tough love. But it's bad policy to say you get to make the decision on how many employees to hire, but you aren't responsible for the cost of those employees. That is bad management. I urge you to vote for the amendment.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment. You know, we send our Joint Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources Committee off for the interim, and we tell them, come back to us with a report on the Game and Fish, and they do that. And I understand that our Vice President is doing his job as well. So I can't help but feel kind of in between on this one. But you know what? I have to represent my district. And I have had numerous phone calls from all of my sportsman friends saying, why are we not being given the opportunity to step up and fund this agency? This is a world-class resource of wildlife and fisheries. It represents, folks, a multi-million-dollar industry in my neighborhood. The Miracle Mile up there attracts millions of dollars to the state of Wyoming and employs hundreds and hundreds of people. And as of last year, because we couldn't figure out how we're going to fund this agency, so we've cut the fish stocking program up there. And guess what? You put that kind of pressure on that river out there, like we've been putting on there, and then you stock fewer fish, it's not going to be the world-class fishery that it was. And then we're going to have people not coming to our state. This is a world-class resource, you guys, and I really respect my friend from Albany County, and he always makes some very good points, and I understand. But you know what? We're at a breaking point where maybe it is time that we start sliding some of this over to state government. Because as a sportsman, I wasn't given the opportunity to pay $10 more for my fishing license so that I could help the agency that's going to take care of that product for me. We didn't allow that. We've got to give this agency some help. And today I'm going to side with the Travel Recreation Committee and try to fund this agency.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, on and in favor of the amendment. You know, fair enough. It's a great proposition to wonder. If you want to fund the grizzly bears, fair enough. Budget bill's next week. You want to bring a bill. Let's figure out how much it is to fund grizzlies and bring a bill, bring an amendment next week and fund it. But none of us would do what you're asking. None of us would do what this bill asks us to do. What this bill's asking us to do is saying, you open up your checkbook and we'll write the check. You just sign your name and we'll fill in the amount. That's what this bill does. It says you just sign your name, legislature. You just sign your name on behalf of the state of Wyoming, and then we'll fill in the amount. Because what it is, you get there. They get to hire as many employees as they can, and with this bill, we have a full obligation to fund the health care, no matter how many they hire. And I don't think there's any one of us in this chamber that would do that with our own checkbook. So if you want, if there's an estimate or somebody wants to bring something about funding grizzly bears, fair enough. That's appropriate, and we can have that debate. But to simply say, well, gosh, we got to do something, so let's just write them a blank check, I don't think that's the way we do things.
President Bates, Senator Hicks.
Quick question for some of the members of the committee. What is the Game and Fish's total budget for the biennium?
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the budget is $66 million, $70 million, right in there, right in that area, I believe. Mr. Chairman, on and against the amendment, I think there's one aspect of this discussion and debate I think was overlooked by both the majority floor leader and the good senator from Natrona County. And that is, if where they're saying if the Game and Fish is that it's bad policy for us to only handle one part of their employment, but they should take responsibility for all of it. Well, if that's the case, then we should make another policy decision, because we do not decide what the salaries, I'm sorry, they do not decide what the salaries are for Game and Fish employees. We do. The last time we gave them a fee increase was 2008. In 2009, we mandated a salary increase for all state employees. Every other agency came to the Appropriations Committee the next year and asked for an increase in their standard budget to make up for that salary increase. And with that salary increase also included donations to the retirement fund. Game and Fish was the only agency that had to absorb that whole thing themselves. They have not had an increase in their license fee since. The budget bill, as going to be proposed starting next week, has another increase for salaries for state employees. That includes Game and Fish employees. Game and Fish has no say over any of that. We do. And we're going to force Game and Fish to accept that and swallow it. So this idea that if we're letting their, if we're and it's going to be an agency run wild and hire everybody they want, that's just not the case. Because they have to hire the number of people that they can absorb, and we tell them how much they're going to pay for it. We tell them how much they're going to pay their employees. We tell them how much they're going to pay into retirement. I think that already violates the model that the majority floor leader had mentioned.
Senator Rothfuss. Senator Meyer.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of things. That the Department of Transportation is a commission budget. They do their employees in retirement the same way, as well as the federal aspect of workforce services. They do their budget the same way. So the Game and Fish Commission is not the only commission, and they're not the only people that are expected to look at different types of increases in their payroll and pay for them within their budget. So it's nothing new. It's across state government. And this style and class of
seems to indicate the mic is on. Perhaps Senator Meyer is not talking directly at it.
All right. So anyway, it's that basically the commission members are and budgets are all handled the same way as far as who has to pay it. The state doesn't pick them up. In the budget on page 16 of 65, just a few things here. The state pays general funds for aquatic invasive species of $1,873,000. Veterinarian service program, $3,805,000. And folks, a lot of that is the brucellosis that the Game and Fish's animals that we hunt bring into the wild into our other livestock industries, and that's $3.8 million to supplement that. Sage grouse, $1.864 million. Wolf management, $1,470,000, and the CWCS of $2,004,000 on that. So, you know, it's not like we're not doing our fair share. Over over $12 million of general funds going to the game and fish for programs that affect the wildlife of this state. That's not paid for by license fees.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, on and against the amendment, I think the state on this autonomous agency that we have, we also dictate, mandate what insurance they're going to have. So it isn't that they have free will over their employees. And this is just a portion of their costs. They are paying the rest of their costs for their employees. I urge you to vote against this amendment.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, this is one of the things I love about a committee of the whole is the unlimited debate and the arguments and debate going back and forth. I'm having fun, actually. Unless the vote goes wrong. Mr. Chairman, to the point by the good senator from Goshen County, Department of Transportation, some of their employees are general funds. Some of their employees are paid off by Department of Transportation. But I would also challenge you to go back since 2008 and look how many hundreds of millions of dollars we've given to the Department of Transportation out of the general fund.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Driscoll first.
Mr. Chairman, on and opposed again, the good senator from the land of ethanol, which is obviously we do nothing there, gave a great list of $12 million out of the general fund. Guess what? That's all $12 million that we told them to spend. They didn't ask to spend any of it. A lot of conveyancers, I played a part in it. We wanted them to do it. We said, spend the money. Brucellosis may be part of their problem. We told them, spend the money. That $12 million, almost every single one of them are ones that we were sent as mandates from us to them. We got control of their fees. We tell them, nope, you can't have it. The wife has the checkbook. And we say, we're not going to pay our part of it. But you know what? He's right down there at the end, good senator. We do give him a blank check, but we also put the money in the account. And if there isn't any money in the account to pay the employees, there isn't any check to write for the benefits. And we directly control that. If you ever think they got too many employees, do what we just got done doing with them. They got 60 less now than they did 2 years ago because we choked their checkbook to where they couldn't pay their employees. We can do it again. You know, this deal's, it's a catch-22 for an agency. We didn't give them the 10-cent gas tax. We did gas tax for YDOT last year. That filled them up, helped them do their deal. We're telling them, no, you're not YDOT. We're not going to let the hunters pay their own fees. We're not going to let that out-of-staters help pay it. We're just saying, sit there and starve. This is absolutely not the way to run a government. I've listened to some really good talks. But this is not how you run a government. If you're not gonna fund it the way that you should fund it, then you run into things like this. And this has happened. We've had 3 years. I've been here 4 years. 3 years of them trying to find ways to get funding. We've told them no repeatedly. So at what point in time do you get where you like I say, you're going to end up with lots of problems on game management? And that ties into money through every aspect of this state. Have you ever picked up a postcard or watched a movie? Take a look at Yellowstone. Buffalo, elk, deer, sheep. Ah, hell, let's quit managing them. And nobody really cares. Then we can look like, guess what? Colorado or South Dakota, Utah. Let's really be proud of our game deal, guys. Let's fund this agency. This deal's necessary.
Yes, Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And one comment my colleague from the northeastern part of the state said that I really agree with. This is not the way to run government. And it isn't. I don't think any of us in here disagree with the fact that there's some concerns about the funding levels of game and fish. There's a process set in place to do it. And if this members of the legislature that happens to be in the other end of this building decide not to fund it, then that's the public debate that should occur. And we talk about ways to go around the corner and do things differently, and it ultimately comes back to bite us. And I don't have to go through the list of all those issues where we've done that. We don't like the way it's done a certain way, so we change our mind, try to circumvent the process, and it comes back and haunts us. If you do this, get ready for the YDOT. Now, how much money is that going to cost? They have a heck of a lot more employees, than Game and Fish. You know, and the other thing that I would ask, and I was going to ask this question, is, you know, they already have a certain type of insurance, I would assume, in the private sector. So you're going to take these people out of the private sector and put them in into our group health insurance. And that's a whole other area of discussion. How many people do we allow in the state to get involved in our group health insurance program where it starts to affect the private sector? That's another concern I have. If you really want to help the Game and Fish, which I think most of us really want to do, the process is set up, raise their fees. And as far as general fund dollars, there's $12 million. If we do more things and ask them to do with general fund money and we put that request on them and they do it, we should pay for it. But you're just going around the process. It's going to come back and haunt you. Vote it up, vote it down, and we'll see. And we'll rest assured that the next biennial budget that comes along, or probably a supplemental budget request, you're going to see this in there. And then get ready for the next part of it, which will be YDOT. And where are we going to get the money?
Question. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on and against the amendment. Mr. Chairman, there's been an assumption in the debate, as I've listened to it, that it's a simple matter. You want more money, you raise the fees. There's a good deal more to it than that, because you've got an external constraint on what you can do with the fees. You raise those fees too much, you can't sell the licenses, particularly some of the out-of-state licenses where we've got them pretty high already. So we've got a problem with this agency, with it being adequately funded. Let's confine the debate to this agency. If some other agency wants us to take care of them, well, we can take care of them appropriately to the extent that that's a good idea or not a good idea. Let's confine to this agency where we know there's a problem. They don't have enough money to manage it properly. We aren't getting the fees raised, and I think there may be a very good reason we're not getting them raised. I think there's a market constraint on what we can do there. And we don't. We're having trouble getting enough hunting pressure in some of our areas. Let's not compound it by raising the fees too much. Let's deal with this. This is an opportunity to deal with this. I would urge us to defeat the amendment and pass the bill.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, you know, we've all been here when these requests to increase fees have come. And you know what? Let's take the highways, for example. We go for a period of time. As soon as you want to do a gas tax, everybody screams. Nobody wants to be taxed. And as we invaded the general fund to solve the problem, taxpayers said, that's great. I don't want my gas taxes. I'd like the mineral industry to pay for it. Somebody else to pay for my taxes. When the roads conditions got to a level where everybody agreed, yeah, we ought to be taxing ourselves, then when we came down to do the tax, it was difficult, but we had enough people supporting the tax, the payers, the users of the roads saying, I'm prepared to pay some more to use the roads. Now, when we get into these fee issues, when I'm at home, I have hunters that are my friends coming up to me right and left and says, I can pay more for fees, I don't know what your problem is. But the day we land here, we get hunters, and it's not non-hunters, sending emails one after another, I don't want to pay an extra $5 or $6, a nominal amount. And you know what, if the Game and Fish, and part of it, the excuses are because they don't like the services that Game and Fish do. So you get an email that says, I'm tired of their service, I don't like this, why should I pay for the green trucks, whatever it is. And you know what, that's part of the responsibility of the Game and Fish to address that issue. And if you ease the burden and say, look, we'll make up the difference out of the general fund because that's a higher priority than the other things, then you just make it easy for everyone to say, I don't want to pay a user fee, because nobody does. And Game and Fish needs to do a better job of describing their problems, getting the people that use their services take the benefit of being able to hunt at low fees to get them to support it. But we've learned in the past that if you subsidize the problem, It'll never write itself, and you never will get the users to pay for it. And in this instance, as we've described before, it's fair enough to say, well, there are programs that really ought to be borne by everybody because we all are impacting it. But when it comes to salaries, that burden needs to fall on the people that make the decision on how many employees to hire. You should bear the entire cost and the burden so that you know how to make good judgment decisions with respect to hiring. I can't imagine any business that says you get to hire, you get to decide the number of employees, and you don't have to pay the cost. It doesn't have to come out on your financial statement. I urge you to support the bill.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, for the body's edification, Game and Fish's health benefits are already they're already in the state health system, just like every other state employee. So when those costs go up, as I said, every other state agency, except for a few members of transportation, get to come to the Appropriations Committee as part of their standard budget. Says here's the expenses that went up. Game and Fish does not have that ability. All we're trying to do is give them the same ability any other state agency has.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, just to finalize and communicate with our staff, they agree. There's never been an instance that we've told Game and Fish that they have to give raises. I don't know where that came from. Now, there are instances. Now, if they want to participate with they have to participate in the state health insurance plan. But that's not a burden. That's a benefit. They get lower rates than you or I could get by being in that large plan. They have to participate in the retirement system, and they get a very good subsidized plan. And but there's never been an occasion. Now, their salaries are set by themselves. They may have to go to A&I to ban them. But our budgetary language, and I looked at it, never tells them what to do with their salaries increases. They make that decision themselves.
Thank you. I'll go to Senator Anderson for a moment.
Mr. Chairman, on and against the amendment. The sportsmen's groups that I talked to were more than willing and very supportive of a price increase in the license fee. I went to several Game and Fish meetings where that was discussed. They came forward and said and even helped set what the rates were, and I've got lots of emails since then saying they still support it from various sportsmen's groups. So just to clear that up, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, every time in my 20 years that the legislature, every time the legislature has raised state employees' salaries, it's always been by a set percentage. Game and Fish has always gone along with that. I don't know that they could actually, for morale purposes, not do that. So technically, it may have to go through the Game and Fish Commission, but in fact, it turns out the same anyway.
Thank you, Senator. We are on the amendment. Any further discussion on the amendment? Hearing none and hearing the question called for. All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 45, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Chairs in doubt. All those in favor, please rise. Those opposed, please rise. That amendment has failed. I vote no. We are back on the bill. Further discussion on Senate File 45. Further discussion? Hearing none. Ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 45, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Division having been called for. All those in favor, please rise. Opposed, please rise. Senate File 45 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, perhaps taking less time, Senate File 57. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 57, sponsored by the Management Audit Committee, Reduction of Boards and Commissions, an Act Relating to Boards and Commissions. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Perkins, no, Senator Meyer, excuse, Senator Hastert, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report to do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 57, Reduction of Boards and Commissions, and to explain this management audit bill, I yield to my colleague, Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Johnson, perhaps? Senate File 57.
Reduction of Boards and Commissions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The important part of this bill is Section 2, page 8, the repealers. Management Audit Committee looks at boards and commissions to see if all of them were active or even if they had any members. We found three that weren't: the Advisory Council for Innovative and Education, the Governor's Food Safety Council, and Wyoming Education Planning and Coordination Council. One or several reasons for these three: no members, no meetings, and the functions can be, or in most cases, are already being done by the agencies themselves. So the repealers on page 8, I know you're looking at them and wondering what they are. 357127 is the Governor's Food Safety Council. 217501C, 2122103, 2122105, 2122107H are the Advisory Council. And then the 2216601 is the Coordinating Council. So it was an interesting experience seeing who's actually working and who's actually producing, and these three aren't. So I would ask you to vote in favor of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Any discussion on Senate File 57? Hearing the question called for, all those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 57, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 57 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 58. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 58, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, National Guard Service Governor's Authority, and Act Relating to the Governor's Authority. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the Senate file. Senator Von Flatern, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 58, and there is an amendment. I ask that it be read in now.
Senate File 58, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, that substitute Number 1 for Senate File 58, do pass.
And, Mr. Chairman, I move Senate file, or Standing Committee number 1, the Senate File 58, and ask at this time for the question.
Thank you, Senator. Let's see. Are all those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 58, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
All right. That amendment has passed Committee of the Whole. Back to you, Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To explain the substitute bill, you also have a handout that's been put on your desk that would look like this. It says Wyoming Military Department at the top. It has my name on it. Your Transportation Committee worked very hard on this particular bill to make it meet the needs of others that were concerned about how broadly written the first one was. And so that's why we went with the idea of a substitute bill. But you'll see that the handout will also tell you that it adds the statutory language that gives the governor authority to order National Guard personnel the duty to using federal money under state control. That's what Title 32 is all about. It is when the federal government is paying the tab, but we still have control over our troops. Examples were the soldiers and airmen that were assigned to secure airports after 9/11, and the C-130s that we use constantly on the national forest, national park areas of any of those fires. They have buckets that they can suck into the back of the C-130s, and they can slurry bomb from there. This bill just clarifies that authority in details. It doesn't add anything to the governor's powers to order anybody anywhere. Under state fund, if we pay for it, he already has that authority. This just clarifies the fact that if it happens to be the government, the federal government paying for it, that he also has the power to authorize or to send the guardsmen to duty. At the bottom of that handout, is a state and federal. It talks about state active duty, Title 32 or Title 10. Title 10 is when they're under federal authority and federal money. Title 32, which is what this bill addresses, is federal money and state authority. And state active duty is state money and state authority. So that's what this bill does. All this bill does, if you go to the bill itself, on line 13 of the first page on the substitute bill, it says only when appropriate federal funds under Title 32 of the United States Code are available to pay. And then we tighten it up a little bit on the back where we starts at the bottom of page 1, using such funds to respond to natural or man-made emergencies within Wyoming to support national wildland fire response, which is the C-130s that we've equipped as such, and they're trained to fly them, or to respond to requests that originated in accordance with Statute 199209. 199209 is also known as the EMAC. This is the agreements we signed with most of the states around us that say if their governor should ask us to come in their defense to take care of anything in their border, whether it be floods, natural or man-made disasters, and in time of actual attacks upon their border, we would respond, and in kind, they would respond should our governor request it. Well, when you sign those kind of agreements, of course, you want to guarantee that you can fulfill the need of whatever troops you do need for that particular action. And that's why we wanted to clarify it in this legislation that the governor could tell the troops to be there and the specific types of troops he would need. So with that, I'll stand for questions and ask for the question, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Von Flatern. Any discussion on Senate File 58? Question having been... Senator Barnard.
Chairman, I have a question. If the governor asks at the request of another state to go in there, to say to fight a wildfire or a forest fire, and that costs the state $80 million, are we guaranteed that we're going to get paid by Colorado or Idaho or some of these states? Are we guaranteed we're going to get that money back? Are we going to get an IOU, or what's going to happen?
Thank you, Senator Barnard. Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Exactly. In the EMACs, it's the receiving state, the requesting state, and the state that has the disaster within their borders. They are paying either they're under federal funding, if it's been declared as such by the federal government,
or they're paying for it themselves. The state is the state that requested the assistance. We would never be on the hook for that money.
Thank you, Senator. Any further questions? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator von Fladen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 58, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Senate File 58 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next Senate file for your consideration is Senate File 70. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 70, sponsored by the Management Audit Committee, State Appropriation Lapsing of Funds, an act relating to administration of government. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the Senate file. Senator Schiffer, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 70, State Appropriations Lapsing of Funds.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer.
Management Audit Committee was asked and did an audit of the B-11 process. That's the process that moves money from either one department to another or one agency to another. That's how we track the B-11 process. It's not only just an approval. It's how we track as funds move around through an agency. In the course of looking at that process, and it is a fairly rigorous process, we found some things in there that we thought needed to be fixed. And this is, well, there's two bills we are bringing to fix it. This is the first of those bills. One of the things that you find in a B-11 process is an agency can hang on to funds that are, quote, outstanding obligation legally incurred. And I'm getting that language at the top of page 2 of the bill. In the old statute, that's all it said. But I'm not sure that what we decided is we needed to define that a little bit better. Because what that is defining is the money that an agency does not have to turn back into the government, reversion, at the end of a biennium. So if you can classify money as an outstanding obligation legally incurred, you don't have to revert it. It means the agency keeps it. The total figure of that is somewhere around $400 million. Now, part of that has to do with health care costs. It's plumb legitimate. Absolutely, that's the way it should be. Part of it is construction for projects out there. Absolutely legitimate. But somewhere around that $40 to $50 million mark might need a little closer scrutiny. And your management audit decided that we could figure out, we devised a way to get a little closer scrutiny. What we do, we go in on page 2, we start defining what is a legally incurred obligation, a master service agreement, goods or services that were received pursuant to a purchase order, goods or services, an invoice received but not paid, salaries earned but not paid, a written agreement for a grant, loan, or other award to distribute funds signed but the money isn't delivered yet, a written offer to promote a grant. Those are the things an agency can hang on to the money for those obligations. That's okay. When we talk about going on to the top of page 4, we say if it's actually the subparagraph B on the middle of page 4, if you say the money's obligated, for whatever reason, you can't then switch it and use it for some other purpose. You got to use it for what it was originally held back. That's what you got to use it for. You can't if you're funding a grant to study prairie dogs, you can't all of a sudden switch the grant and go look at game and fish finances or some other crazy thing that nobody's much interested in. We're going on the bottom, and here's kind of where the here's where we check up on agencies. This is where we go find that $40 or $50 million. Starting on 9-4207, in each even numbered year, not later than, and there will be an amendment on the date. We've got September 1st, but we're going to ask you to change that to July 15th. The state auditor shall provide to each affected agency a list of existing unexpended appropriations. What that means is a staff member from the state auditor's office goes through every single budget of every single agency and identifies that what they'll initially identify will be somewhere in the hundreds of millions of dollars if you take all of the money that's sitting out there. Not later than September, I'm on the top of page 5, not later than September 15th, each agency shall provide that employee what the nature of that outstanding balance is. In other words, is it a legitimate obligation that they can hold, or will that money revert? Not later than October 1st, the state auditor goes in, and unless the money can be held legally, the things that I talked about earlier, the state auditor pulls that money back into the general fund or whichever fund it goes to. Traditionally, there is somewhere around $40 or $50 million that reverts. That's not a big deal. Sadly enough, the number appears to be going down a little bit. We don't know why, but the state auditor is going to find out why. And that person that she's going to hire to do that will go into every agency and look at their books and determine, are they holding money for an appropriate reason, or should it be returning? And where that money goes to is back to the general fund, and then we can reappropriate it throughout some other worthwhile thing. Mr. Chairman, we go on. They then write up a report. You can see that on page 4. It starts actually on the report shall include, and I'm on page 6 now of the identify the provisions of law initially appropriating the funds, and the amount that's not reverted, why the fund did not revert, the anticipated day on which the funds will be returned, the purpose and timeline, if they get to hold the funds, the purpose and timeline for which they're held. That's the bill. We're out there looking for money that rightfully should come back to the general fund, and that's the mechanism we propose to use to get that, whatever it is, $40, $50 million back to the general fund. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Senator, would this be a good time to have Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 read in, perhaps, and addressed, or would you like to do that in a minute?
Mr. Chairman, I'd say go ahead and read it in, but I think the tall fellow over there with the sharp pencil needs
it. Great. I'll ask that be read in now, please.
Senate File 70, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 4, line 20.
Thank you. Senator Bebout?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and in the process of Senator explaining the bill, I'm sure he can take care of that amendment as well.
Thank you, Senator Bebout. Back to you, Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, this amendment is on the it's page 4, line 20. That's the date. We're changing that date to July 15th. Reason being that in order to find this money, you have someone, a person, has to go through every single agency budget and find out where there are unexpended funds, And then trace that back to the original appropriation. Is it, what's it for? If it's to build a building, for example, then it'll stay there. But that person's going to have to go back through the books and locate it and identify it and say, should it stay or should it come back to the general fund? We visited with the state auditor, and she would like to have more time to get started on this because it is an awesome job. Even with the computers, it's an amazing job, but they feel they can do it. So that's what moving it to July 15th, so they'll have more time to work on it.
Thank you, Senator. We are on Standing Committee Amendment number one. Is there any discussion on that Standing Committee Amendment? All right, hearing none, calling for the question. All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number one to Senate File 70, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number one has passed the Committee of the Whole. We're back on the bill. Senator Schiffer.
I'd like to have the Committee of the Whole Amendment number one read in.
Senate File 70, Committee of the Whole Amendment number one, page one, line four.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment number one to Senate File 70. And Mr. Chairman, in looking at this process, we looked at it. It is a mammoth job. And I believe if I'm going to bring a bill, and this is just my personal philosophy, that requires resources, I put them in the bill. When we drafted this bill, and I'm the vice chairman of the committee, so I'm taking it's my responsibility. This was the fiscal report I got. It's not even half a page. The other day when I walked in to the committee that was hearing this bill, this is the fiscal report I got. Substantially higher. It's some, I don't know how many pages. But, you know, it happens. It just happens. I should have checked closer, but I was not given this fiscal report when we drafted the bill and when we posted the bill. I still think we need resources to do this. Let me tell you what this amendment does. It puts in a position starting on June 30th, 2016. That's when the biennium starts. For the biennium, they're going to spend $121,000 on this position. What this is the person that goes into each agency budget, sees what the unexpended balance is, what the money is used for, what it was appropriated for, how much has been used, and how much hasn't been used. It is a mid-level technical auditor-type job. I submit to you, Mr. Chairman, that you can invest $121,000 in this person, and that person probably will return you somewhere in the neighborhood of $40 or $50 million back to your general fund. This is the person that goes and finds the reversions. This is the person that tells the state auditor, now go get them, boss. We want our money back. It's good bookkeeping. It is an enforcement we have never had in the 20 years I've been down here. And then I spent a bunch of those years on appropriations. We always just had to accept what the reversions were. This way, we're going to go get the reversions. The law says you will revert, and now we've got somebody that says, write the checks, you agencies that are holding money that is not authorized. I'll be happy to answer any questions. I urge you to hire this person and pay them and have them go find our money for us.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And being in the Appropriations Committee, we come to the floor a lot of times and we try to ask some good, tough questions to understand what's going on. And my colleague from up in the northern part of the state in Johnson County explained it very, very well. First of all, the bill's a good bill, and it's very important, and I totally support the bill. It's an unfortunate thing that we were able to receive the fiscal impact the day of the meeting, and Senator, my colleague from Johnson County received at the same time that the Joint Appropriations Committee did, and And I've had an opportunity, and one of the unfortunate things that I'm not sure that this fiscal note has been distributed to the body, and I take the responsibility of that. I should have done that and got it out to you. But if you read it, and maybe what we can do is get this out and let you think about it, and we may talk about it more on second reading. But if you read it, the state auditor does a great job of talking about all of the work she's doing, extra work, and certainly there's no question about it. But it's hard to determine from this two pages of what really is the impact of what we're asking her to do that's extra. And I when I read this, there's clearly some additional administrative expense, and clearly we need to talk about it. But there's also a page about all the other things she has to do, and you wonder if she's not covering some of that extra duty for whatever reason it might be with this. So, you know, very reluctantly, at least this time, voted up, voted down, I would say that I would ask you to defeat this. Let's get this out, and if we need to have some more discussion, at least we'll have this document in front of us and can really make a good decision.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. We're on the amendment. Question. No further discussion. Question being called. All in favor of Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, and in order to do the kind of work that we're talking about, this takes a pretty unique individual. I don't know what all they do in the state auditor's office. They monitor the books, and I know the state auditor signs the checks, or a machine does, or all those things. But they track the money. That's kind of an accounting job. But if you want to go get money back from an agency and understand some of the financial people in these agencies, and I'm not naming any particular agency, but there's some of those chief financial officers are very clever people, and they know how to hang on to money, and they've been practicing it. Some of them for 20 and 30 years. Hell, bank robbers don't last that long, and these guys are good at it. And if you want to go get that money back, you better get somebody. The best person I think I could recommend just off the top of my head would be Butch Cassidy's great-grandson or granddaughter, because they've got a robbery in their blood, and maybe they could go find this stuff. But you got to get a sharp person in there that knows the books and knows how to go get your money back for you. And I urge you to support this amendment and get your money back.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I had the misfortune of being present in the Appropriations Committee when this particular bill was discussed. I was waiting for another bill. And I will confess that it was difficult to stay awake through the discussion. But, frankly, I was persuaded that the additional person was well needed for the duties of this job, because Senator Schiffer said it much more eloquently than I can, but those fiscal people and some of the, particularly the bigger state agencies where the more money on, they're skillful. And it's not going to be an easy thing, and you're going to have to hire somebody that knows what they're doing.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate being recognized. Mr. Chairman, I'm a little bit confused. I didn't know that we were going to look in the hole in the wall country for someone to work in the state auditor's office. But but one of the things that I remember very well listening both in the when the state auditor came before us in the budget hearings, both in the supplemental and then a little bit this year, talking about the great strides she had made in increasing the professionalism in her office. I mean, the state auditor, if I remember right, is a CPA. She's been concentrating on providing the continuing education and upgrading the people, the folks, and the skill sets and the efficiencies of the state auditor's office. They've automated some more of their things. So, I mean, when I look at that, I guess I'm confused in that if the professionalism and the professional capacity in the office has been increased, why we would need this additional person.
Thank you, Senator. All right, question has been called. All in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 70, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
That amendment has passed the Committee of the Whole. We are back on the bill.
Discussion on Senate File 70? Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 70, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 70 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for your consideration is Senate File 72. Will the reading clerk read the bill?
Senate File 72, sponsored by Senator Case, burglary, an act relating to crimes and offenses. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, and Kraft. No, Senators Christensen and Driscoll. Senator Burns, Chairman.
Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 72. There are no standing committee amendments, and for further explanation, I ask that you call on the Chairman of the Corporations Committee.
Thank you. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm bringing this bill about burglary, and what it does is it creates a misdemeanor level of burglary. There are several crimes in the area of theft. There's larceny, and there's entering, and there's trespass. These all have misdemeanor levels, but burglary doesn't. Mr. Chairman, the problem is that, as the statute reads, and it's defined by this legislature, a person is guilty of burglary if, without authority, he enters or remains in a building, occupied structure, or vehicle, or separately secured or occupied portion thereof, with intent to commit larceny or a felony therein. And then the penalty for burglary, there are two levels of felony, Mr. Chairman. The first one is a 10-year felony and $10,000. But if it's an aggravated burglary, it can be a felony from 5 to 25 years, so up to a 25-year felony, and the fine is up to $50,000. I'm not talking about aggravated burglary. I'd like to talk to you about the case of something very small and de minimis, Mr. Chairman, which can be taken. And I think we should take 1 second here and talk about how the law defines what an occupied structure is. I always assumed an occupied structure was something that had people in it. That's not how the law is defined, and it's in statute. It's in the criminal code, of course, and it says occupied structure means a structure or vehicle whether or not a person is actually present. So it's a structure or a vehicle, irregardless of a person is present, that's an occupied structure. Kind of weird, but that's the way it is. Now, there's a little bit more framework about it. It talks about people should come in there once in a while, and you can reasonably expect to find a person there. But an occupied structure is something, it can be a vehicle that's unoccupied. And so it can be an unlocked vehicle. I can be in the parking lot of the grocery store, be 22 years old and suffering from bad sense, and see a wallet sitting on the seat of someone's car. And I reach through an open window, I pick up that wallet, turns out, who cares what the amount of money is, that's any theft, that is an up to 10-year punishable burglary. And by the law, that's what it should be charged as, because you're entering what the law defines as an occupied structure or vehicle. Now, what happens thankfully this happens, is that our prosecutors probably look at that and say, you know, that's really, I don't want to send somebody away for that or have that go. So let's figure out a different way to charge it. And they might charge it with theft, larceny. But the law says it should have been burglary because the law is written that it's burglary. So what my bill does is to modify, if certain elements are present, then you could charge with a misdemeanor. There's a long list of elements. Their first one is that it's less than $1,000. I didn't choose less than $1,000. I actually preferred a smaller amount. But less than $1,000 matches the misdemeanor statute under theft and the larceny, Mr. Chairman. So you can't have it one way for one statute and the other. The second element
is that there's no other felony committed and that the building is not occupied by anyone. There's nobody there. That the building is not locked, building or vehicle, I should say. And here's another one that has to be present. Not that the building is not designated or adapted for overnight accommodation. It's not a place where people live, not a place where they sleep. So what I'm trying to carve out with each one of these five elements, and they all have to be present, okay, is the case of someone that reaches into the window of a car, maybe opens an opens a door at a car that's unlocked, steals something small. Someone that goes into your garden shed in your backyard and takes a shovel, Mr. Chairman. Those all would fall under this misdemeanor category. And they would also fall, if it was charged under the larceny statute, it could be a misdemeanor larceny, Mr. Chairman. But I really don't think by the law, because you enter into this thing, this structure, it has to come under burglary. That's what the bill does. Now, there was a few arguments against the bill, Mr. Chairman. One was that there was an argument that $1,000 is a lot of money and that I could take somebody's chainsaws where they earn a living and really deprive them of their livelihood. And I agree with you that $1,000 is a lot of money. But you could take those same chainsaws now if they were in the back of a pickup truck or sitting in front of the garage up to $1,000. It's the exact same thing. But if you open the door on the garage and walk in and check the chainsaws, it's a 10-year felony. How can that be? We get to decide. And it's also been told to me that, look, prosecutors and judges don't really work that way. And I think that's good. But really, I think that we need to define what the law is, what the elements are. And I don't think this is being soft on crime, Mr. Chairman. I think it gives people that make a mistake a chance, and if I'm glad to do that. I actually think we lock too many people up, and to have the penalty be up to 10 years for stealing a cigarette lighter off the dashboard of a car is not reasonable. And I ask for your help on this bill. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion on 72, Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, I'd urge you to be very cautious on this bill. When we look at our criminal statutes, you have larceny as a misdemeanor. You have criminal entry as a misdemeanor. Burglary is a combination of those two. And then when you look at the amount of money involved, it's implied or it's stated here that if you have a lock on your barn and you can prove it, it's a burglary felony, but if for some reason the lock isn't there or you can't find it, they go inside your barn and steal your saddle, then it's a misdemeanor. Before you make too many commitments on this bill, I'd suggest use your weekend to talk to your sheriff, your chief of police, maybe your prosecutor, and find out what the consequences are for this. There are, sometimes the entertainment industry makes a big deal out of dumb criminals, but I'll tell you, in my experience, you don't have to be that sharp to figure out that you can do a whole lot of stealing, keep it under $1,000, and there's no significant penalty. If you're doing burglaries out of barns, out of sheds, out of whatever it is, gas, you name it. And so It is a serious thing. This is a crime that is a combination of misdemeanors. Just the tools of a burglar is a felony. And so then to say the actual burglary itself is a misdemeanor, I have trouble with this one. I'd encourage you to be very careful.
Thank you, Senator Christensen. Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm also getting a lot of words of caution back from those who deal with this at home, and the one thing that they pointed out that may be new to the discussion, they're talking about perhaps those who go through these types of charges are given a break anyway in the first go-around. This opens up something that simply if we leave that property unlocked, then all of a sudden it lessens the penalty in some way. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, speaking on and for the bill, just want to make a couple of points. One, this is a serious penalty here. Misdemeanor punishable by imprisonment for not more than 1 year, fine of not more than $1,000. That's, you know, that's a high misdemeanor. That's a significant penalty. And I think we're better served by having the distinction in the law to where the punishment fits the crime. And the crime here is a good deal less serious than other crimes that get you the 10-year felony that the current law would get you for burglary under these circumstances. So, yeah, it's a nuisance. Somebody goes into your store shed, steals your lawnmower, and it's worth $300 or $500, whatever those things are worth these days. I suppose it depends on how many bells and whistles you have on them. It's a nuisance. It's a pain. But it's not as if they'd come breaking into your house. It's not worthy of the 10-year thing. And this thing is open to abuse. You go in, you borrow your neighbor's lawnmower. You think he won't care, and he does care. And you should have asked him ahead of time and not just presume. If he happens to be mad at you, you're in trouble here. And we need to have the penalties better suiting the crime. Mr. Chairman, this is a good bill so that we don't fill up our prisons with people who need not 10 years, but a slap on the wrist, well, more than the slap on the wrist, a short stay in the county jail to wake them up, maybe. But it's not appropriate to charge a 10-year felony for the kinds of actions that we're talking about in this bill. It is appropriate to make it a high misdemeanor.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Anderson, 28.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a problem with this bill also, as the senator from Alta does. This is a little innocent little thing that the good senator from the middle of the state says that the boy just reaches in and gets the wallet, and just it's just an innocent thing. It's not an innocent thing. The wallet is not worth anything. The credit card's in it. The ID is worth a lot. He can sell those and does sell them. This happened to my daughter. They sold them off. They caught the kid. He didn't do anything. I mean, the wallet was nothing. They didn't even charge him. But then when the identity theft happened, she had to correct everything. I want that to be a bigger deal, not just a misdemeanor.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion, Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I was sitting here thinking about it and remembering, I worked in two different jurisdictions, and in both of them, what happened was when you started seeing a string of auto burglaries, it was almost always from unlocked vehicles. And typically, once there was a string of them, and this was in two counties on the western side of the state, it was usually also tied to meth. And so when we say it's just reaching in for a cigarette or a tape or something like that, it's usually tied to something a little more serious than that. And these are the kind of things that do deserve serious consideration from both law enforcement for public safety. If you've ever been the victim of a burglary out of some of your outbuildings, we've had that happen. And I'll tell you, it's not a little thing. And 25 years later, when I go in a saddle shop, I still look for my dad's saddle. So let's be careful. Let's take this serious and not diminish what it feels like to have your property invaded, your belongings taken, and then say it's really not a big deal. And I'll also tell you that it's not my experience at all, and I don't believe it is in hardly any places in the state. I can't say all of them. That your prosecutors and your judges are looking to send every first-time offender to the penitentiary. That just doesn't happen. It's expensive, it costs time, and generally, my experience is that people want to help folks change their behavior, not lock them up. And so, the number of times people are initially charged with felonies and it's pled down to criminal entry, probation, split sentencing, that's what typically happens. don't be scared by looking at these big numbers and assume that your 18-year-old neighbor is going to be gone for 10 years for reaching in the inside the cab of the pickup.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I guess that's the part that bothers me the most, is that some people think that we should just give high penalties to the discretion of the people enforcing the law, prosecutors, judges, and police officers. And I actually don't think that's appropriate. I think the legislature, we're elected, we get to decide. And then, you know, we ask them to enforce the law. If it was so easy and they were so good at doing all this, we just let everything be a 10-year felony and then let them all sort it out and then it'll get fled down somewhere and it'll all work out. Just trust us. It's not exactly like that. The penalty ought to fit the crime. And my prosecutor supports this. Absolutely. This was brought to me by, you know, by a lawyer who works in the area. It makes sense when you think about it. Going into a garden shed is not the same potential crime as breaking into somebody's house when the people are sleeping upstairs. It's not the same. But yet the penalty in this bill is a year is a long time to be in jail. And if they deserve a year, they can get sentenced to a year. The wallet issue, you know, the good senator is right about the wallet issue. But there are other things about identity theft, and if you use those credit cards for more than the amount, I think that comes under the threshold and makes it the higher felony. You know, it's sort of a different crime. He's absolutely right. Losing your wallet is terrible, and if they use it for identity theft, you know, but that is a crime. And, you know, that's probably a poor example that I use. But we're talking about all sorts of things. That if they were sitting in the front yard, you're stealing the same thing, and it's a misdemeanor. But if it's inside a garden shed where the door is just barely propped open, and you steal the exact same thing, it's 10 years versus a misdemeanor. Now, come on. We get to decide what the crimes are. A year's a long time, and I ask you to support this bill.
Thank you. Senator Driscoll.
Mr. President, answer to the question. unopposed, you know, I've never heard of a person getting a felony for first or second offense on little deals. And garden sheds and back of vehicles and out by the street are really different things. Most people that go in with intent to take something out of a garden shed or out of the back of your vehicle intend to steal something. And they can be pretty serious things. And I tend to go along with the good senator from Alta. I tried to amend this in committee to a lower amount, and maybe I'd look at it if it'd go to a lower amount. But when you can lose something that's $1,000, that's a lot of money this day and age still. And that's really what we're saying is we're not going to do much to you for up to $1,000. And I really am not interested in helping people get up to $1,000. If you know there's penalty for stealing something, there's a penalty for stealing something. We've got by for years and years and years, and I haven't seen any of our prison folks coming in saying that we're full of felons in the state prison system for guys that took little something out of a garden shed. So I'd oppose you to stand opposed to the bill or to, at the very least, amend it down to a very low amount if we're going to make it a misdemeanor.
Thank you. All right. Question has been called. Yes, Senator Case.
Here's a long time to be in jail.
Thank you, Senator Case. Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 72, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please rise.
All those opposed, please rise. Aye. Senate File 72 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next file for your consideration is Senate File 78. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 78, sponsored by the Education Committee, the Jason Flatt Act 2, an act relating to school districts. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Barnard, Cole, Landon, and Rothfuss, Senator, co-chairman.
You've heard the reading of Senate File 78. Senator Coe, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, moving the committee the whole rise and report that do so with a do-pass recommendation on Senate File 78. Members of the Senate, this is the Jason Flatt Act. This proposed piece of legislation was brought to us to the Joint Education Committee by the former Attorney General. And he brought that bill to us for a major concern that we have with our young people in the state of Wyoming, and that's suicide. Wyoming has one of the highest suicide rates in the country, and our young people are no different. We have a serious problem with suicide. What this bill does, it requires every teacher and administrator to have 8 hours of training to be able to recognize symptoms that might be out there. But I will say that spread over a four-year period. It does require a new teacher or administrator to take 2 hours the first year they come in. It is a serious problem. If we can go out with something like this and just recognize a couple of, I mean, just one, you know, prevent one, it's worthwhile. You know, we have a situation, and I've seen it happen around the country and in Wyoming. Bullying's a big problem. There are kids out there that actually have committed suicide because of bullying. That's what the bill does. It's a model act. The Joint Education Committee liked it, and so we brought it forward for your consideration. I ask that you consider it favorably.
Thank you, Senator Cohen. Any discussion on Senate File 78? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering, sponsor of the bill, if you could tell me where the money comes from for this. Is this part of the education budget already? Is this time, this 8 hours, going to be taken away from something else?
Thank you. Any other questions for the Chairman of Education before he rises? Senator Meyer.
Yeah. Is there provision in the bill for districts that have already provided this training to certify that their teachers are trained in this, and so they don't necessarily have to expend the funds or the time? Because there's a couple of districts I know that I represent that have already gone through some of this type of stuff.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Anyone else? Senator Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the concern I have with this bill is, you know, it seems to me that 8 hours is very inadequate in terms of training. And who's going to do the training? What kind of qualifications are these people going to have? Those kind of questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Escobar. We'll go to Senator Dockstader.
Mr. Chairman, it's a good concept all the way around. My comments are similar to the good senator from Goshen. I think we're already doing it with our teachers, our coaches, our counselors, our school administrators, so I'm not sure that it's needed.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions before the sponsor rises? Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there is no appropriation with this. It's just part of what the block grant does. And believe me, there's adequate funding in the block grants that go to these districts to be able to do it. We had no opposition to the bill from anybody saying, hey, we need money to do this. The textbooks or the material used will be chosen by the department down the street to be distributed and used in the different districts. We had no opposition from anybody in the interim, and I think it's a good bill. Ask for your support.
Thank you, Senator Coe. Any further discussion? All right. Question, are you ready for the question, I assume? Excellent. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 78, say aye. Opposed, no. Senate File 78 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next Senate file for your consideration is Senate File 103. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 103, sponsored by the Management Council. State Building Construction, an act relating to the administration of government. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Haster, Meyer, and Perkins. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
Thank you. You've heard the reading of the Senate file. What is your pleasure, Mr. President? No. Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do with a favorable recommendation do pass. On Senate File 103, I yield to the President to explain the bill.
Gotcha. Thank you. Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, bring to you what you've been hearing about for quite some time, a bill concerning the Capitol, its renovation, its rehabilitation, and a project that includes a connector and rehabilitation of the Hirschler Building. We've endeavored to embark on this for a number of years. It started over a decade ago when we started putting money away. It started right here in this body with Senator Mockler advising us we have a real problem. The problem hasn't gone away. In fact, it's gotten worse. We had the foresight to start parking money away. And as of June of this year, we will have $100 million in the bank for the renovation and capital restoration project. The amount that we actually saved was closer to $108 million, but we've been spending money per the authorization of this legislature and the SLIB board as we continue to proceed through level one, level two design, not only of the capital, but level one, level two of the connector and the Hirschler Building. I would tell you that while I view this as my signature piece of legislation, it is not mine. It's the people's. And there are a lot of people that have worked very, very hard to bring this product to you here today. I'd specifically like to recognize Senator Von Flatern and Senator Emmerich, who served on the Joint Executive Legislative Task Force. We have former members of the legislature who served, and we also had representatives from each and every executive office in this Capitol at every meeting, along with A&I and construction management. We met almost monthly at least, or twice a month at times. Folks, is the product of our work. Now, you're not all going to get this, but this is available for your review, and you will be receiving next week on Monday a jump drive with a lot of the salient information in this in these documents that you'll be able to take home with you to explain photographs of all the needs of this capital and the needs of the Hirschler Building. You cannot discount the Hirschler Building and what its needs are at this time, too. That building is over 30 years old and is in need of its own repairs. So we will be able to, in essence, kill two birds with one stone with this project. But the greatest thing about this project is its access to our government. You all know what it's like. I was in a Judiciary Committee this morning. I could barely get in the room, let alone to present the bill, and there was nowhere to sit. And people are out in the hall. The only room that we really have for committee hearings of any marketable size is room 302. In fact, even appropriations isn't conducive to the public. A lot of room in there, but it's made up of mostly desks and so forth. We will have state-of-the-art conference rooms, committee rooms,
not only in this building, but in the connector, with four large rooms the size of approximately room 302. And when you do come into the new connector into the Herschler building, there will also be a large room, more of a theater-sized room that the public can utilize for other events other than just your government. I don't want to spend a lot of time walking you through this bill. It's been vetted unanimously by your management council. It has been vetted by your appropriations committee on several occasions, presentations to the appropriations committee. And in each and every time that it's been vetted, it has come out unanimously. It is a lot of money. There is no doubt about it. But when you look at what the project is and what it does, it makes all the sense in the world. We can no longer hide our heads in the sand and pretend that this doesn't exist. It is real. We are at this point where it's now time to fish or cut bait. And I suggest to you that we are doing the right thing by doing this for the people of the state of Wyoming. The Capitol grounds will be something that we can be proud of. We'll restore the stairs that used to be on the north side of this building. And the grounds in between the Herschler and the Capitol will become green space for utilization by our public to give the perspective of how great this Capitol really is. Now, you all know that we have problems. When we started this endeavor, we started doing all of our kind of what we would call an MRI of the building, we noticed that there was a bunch of the blocks above the north or south entrance that were about to fall. Those are being held up by mesh right now, folks. So it's an important project. Yeah, I'm heavily invested in it, and I am emotional about it because it is something that this building is the most historic building in the state of Wyoming. So, the total ticket is $259 million for the whole project. Now, you got to remember that when we do the renovation of this Capitol, there we will be down to about 50,000 square feet net usable space. That is not enough room to house everybody in the Capitol. The need space is about 92,500 square feet. But with the renovation of the Herschler and the addition in the Herschler, we will gain 95,000 square feet. We have 382,000 square feet of lease space in the city of Cheyenne that costs us somewhere in the neighborhood of $6 to $7 million a year. Now, we will make a little dent in that, about a quarter of that, by doing what we're doing here today. So, I can walk you through the bill if you want, but the reality is it's pretty well laid out. We set up what I would call, it's called the oversight group, and that is the governor and the legislature. There, we reenact the task force. That will still be in effect, and they will provide day-to-day kind of advisory to that oversight group. The governor and the legislature will convene to oversee the project, but the time is now. The reason we're appropriating $259 million here today is because we are now at that stage where we need to do level 3 design. So the best way I can explain level 1 and level 2 design is that level 1 and level 2 design basically identifies the problem. We've done a pretty good job of that. That's those documents. Level 3 is now how do you solve the problem. So when we start into this, now we have to commit funds to that. And with the help of the majority floor leader and people from appropriations, we've come up with a funding solution for how we're going to fund this. We don't have to fund it all today, but you'll see in this bill that there's $37,500 in for this year out of general fund. And we'll have to do that for about 4 years, and with some sort of appropriation probably in the fifth year to, if there's a balance. But I think it's high time that we take care of this wonderful building. Will it be an inconvenience? Yes. We will be out of the building for 2 years. But let me tell you, that's the smart way to do it. The state of Colorado decided that they were going to renovate their capital, but they were going to do it while they stayed in. They're way over budget. They're millions and millions of dollars over what they projected, and they're still doing it 10 years later. So I urge your favorable consideration. If you want questions about the bill, I'd be happy to entertain them. But as you can tell, I think this is a really, really important project.
Thank you, Mr. President. There is a committee of the whole amendment. I'd ask that that be written now. Yeah, please read that in.
Senate File 103, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 19 after line 20. Make sure it gets
me. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 103 and ask, in fact, insist on your support. Favorable opinion. You know, it's true. This is the people's building, and we need to lead by example. So there has been our allegations that the legislature has been piggy in what it does. So we're going to lead by example. So in Section 10, it provides Part B, that we provided a suitable amount of space to show what a person can do his job with. We will have a light fixture in there. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, this might serve for the current president, but what about if the vice president becomes president? And we've talked about that, and he's offered to be surgically altered to get in here. Yeah, a little knee surgeries. So that's fine. And then finally, with respect to the first part A, we are a religious nation, and we should have prayers occasionally, and we should express that. And so I urge your support.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Is there any discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1? Mr. President.
Members of the Senate, I have such a deal for you. If you don't like it, I break both of your knees.
Thank you for those comments, Mr. President. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 103 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
That amendment fails, Committee of the Whole. We're back on Senate File 103. Further discussion on the Senate file. Senator Anderson, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps a bit of a more serious note, I just want to tell you how much I agree with the President. And I also want to say that, having been in those shoes and having been in that chair, one of the heaviest responsibilities you feel is that of safety for not only all the members of the body which you serve, but the members on the other side and all the employees. And at the time of my service as president, I would say I always lived a bit in fear of some sort of event, perhaps when the governor was giving his remarks or that in this building. And so with that in mind, I would like to just ask you to support this. And in that same tone, I would like to thank the President, President Ross, for his service to this whole issue. Now, not to take any credit, but I think there was a time when I was president, I got a call, and they needed an appointee to represent the Senate within and on this group. Immediately, to my mind, came then Vice President Ross, and I made that appointment. The reason I made that appointment, one, is he lives in Cheyenne. He was close. He could attend these meetings. But I knew of his passion and how much he cared for this institution and for this facility. And I will tell you, and again, as I thank him, he has represented this well, and he had not let me down in that effort. And so I'd say, Mr. President, thank you in your effort.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Anderson. Any further discussion on Senate File 103? Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 103, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 103 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next Senate file for our consideration, Senate File 81. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 81, sponsored by Senator Christensen, Employer Access to Social Media Accounts, an act relating to labor and employment. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28. Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 81 do pass. There were no standing committee amendments, and I yield to Senator Christensen for an explanation of the Senate file.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, Senate File 81 is a bill that prohibits employers from requesting or requiring access to social media accounts by their employers or prospective employers. And it falls under statutes 27.9105A with the first sentence there, line 15 on page 1. It is a discriminatory or unfair employment practice, rolling over to the top of page 2. And then I'll just paraphrase. For an employer, employment agency itself, or through its agent, i.e. other coworkers or friends, so forth, to request or require any employee to disclose any username, password, or other means of viewing or accessing information on that employee or prospective employee's social media. There's a definition of social media. It's a fairly extensive definition starting on the end of page, or line 8 on page 2. Electronic service or account, electronic content, including but not limited to videos, still photographs, blogs, video blogs, podcasts, instant and text messages, email, online services or accounts, or internet website profiles or locations. Now, there's the restriction. Now, it's important to know that this isn't an absolute restriction. There are still valid and appropriate reasons to be able to request or require those. And what they go on down in paragraph A, B, C, and D with A when it talks about an employer-issued electronic device on line 19 and 20 of page 2. Going on into B over at the top of page 3, information that might be relevant to an investigation of allegations of employee misconduct or an employee violation of applicable laws and regulations, provided that the social media is solely used for purposes of their investigation or related proceedings. And then C, conducting an investigation of their social media in compliance with requirements of state or federal rules or statutes. And then down in D, that this one is strictly for pre-employment, and the key on that is in line 17. It refers to law enforcement in the course of a law enforcement employment application. What we've seen is right now there are about 12 states in the country that have this type of restriction. I just saw a media document 3 days ago that said there are 25 other states that have legislation pending of this nature. A few years ago, we generally viewed some of these social media sites as places where kids went and said outrageous things and posted all kinds of activities, and they weren't taken too seriously. However, recently,
The trends are that Facebook in particular is used for almost 50% of the population in the world that is using social media. And they're using it for a number of different things. People use that as opposed to email, different ways to communicate. How many times have you, this is a frustrating one for a parent, called your child's phone? They won't answer, but if you text them, they reply immediately. And some people don't want to talk anymore, but they will text you in a heartbeat. And I've seen that. So this just protects that. It says that you don't have the right to request that. It was raised that this is interesting in that why can't we even ask? And I would liken it to the laws that the Highway Patrol uses when you're going down I-80 and you're driving a car from California and you're running at high speeds with big old bloodshot eyes focused on four states away. And that law enforcement officer can say, if they have probable cause for that stop, may I check your car? May I look through your car? They have the right to do that. That person, should they choose to say no, they're probably never going to see that law enforcement officer again. There's no relationship or no going forward really responsibility rights or anything like that. However, depending on the circumstances, when a person comes in for a job and they are maybe need that job desperately, it's not the same circumstance. It's not the same thing. And so if an employer has that ability to say, I would like to see your social media accounts, I'd like to see your passwords, and we'd like to dig around, while that prospective employee may say no, there are significant odds that it changes that relationship. And when you're looking at paying your mortgage, feeding your family, it's a completely different picture as far as telling anybody no. And so this just goes back to respecting privacy, to saying you don't get to be put under that kind of pressure. A few years ago, when we were seeing social media used for all kinds of, and it still does, but irresponsible postings by kids in particular, well, now a lot of those kids are in their mid-20s, and to have something held against them that they said, printed, or took a picture of in college may not be appropriate to hold back their future. You know, either careers, family decisions, or so forth. And so I'd ask you to give serious consideration, please support this bill. I think it does play a lot into our privacy, and it's a good bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Christensen. Any discussion on Senate File 81? There are no amendments. Any discussion? Hearing none. Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 81, please say aye. Opposed, no. Senate File 81 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 56. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 56, sponsored by Senator Geis, State Engineer Fees, an act relating to the State Engineer. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agricultural, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, Hicks, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that Senate File 56 do pass. I'll yield the floor to Senator Driscoll to explain the bill.
Thank you, Senator Geis. Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, great honor to get to speak for the great senator from up in the basin. 56 is a bill that just brings some things back together and gets in line about the well drilling program. And it changes the fees to make the program where it is totally self-supports itself and moves a part-time employee to a full-time employee on the thing. It's got some problems with that way without having it that way. The well driller board is the only state licensed board without a full-time state employee in the administrator's position. It's been filled with a AWAC position. And that leaves some liability because the position's doing regular employee work. Wyoming Water Well Association is a regulated community, offered a letter of support to make it a full-time equivalent. The well permit positions are down some. reduce the operating revenue to the board based on the permit fees. Raising these fees will do that. They're raising the fee from a $25 fee to a $50 fee. The net effect of change is to add about $60,000 to biennium into the fund, diverted to the board's fund, with all the monies coming from the regulated community. Of course, this means the same amount will not be deposited to the general fund, which is where the SEO applications go. Without the added funding, the board's unable to sustain the increased costs, making the administrator full-time equivalent. State Engineer's Office already covered part of the costs, the FTE, by providing a vehicle to the administrator. This is a service, once again, that we required guys to do, and we're putting it where it's done right. So I encourage you to support the bill.
Thank you, Senator Driscoll. Discussion on Senate File 56. There are no amendments. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, just one edification that it is just a correction. I think the good senator from up in Devil's Tower misspoke. This is not an increase in fees. The current fee is $50. What it just does is take all of that fee and transfer it over to the well drillers instead of assess a new fee. So I just wanted to make that clear.
Thank you, Senator Hicks. Further discussion on Senate File 56. Hearing none, hearing the question called. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 56, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 56 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next Senate file for your consideration is Senate File 3. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 3, sponsored by the School Facilities Committee. School Facilities Corroborative Committee Process. An act relating to school facilities. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Anderson, 02, Barnard, Cole, Linden, and Rothfuss, Senator Co-Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so, it do pass recommendation on Senate File 3 and defer to Senator Landon.
Thank you, Senator Coe. Senator Landon, my apologies. Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I wanted to talk before we got to this bill, but I just want the body to know on Senate File 56, that's in a business that I'm in, and I don't think that I have a conflict because I'm a class of persons that drill those water wells, but I just wanted the body to be aware of it.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Sorry for failing to acknowledge you a little bit earlier. Back to Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is that good little friend that I introduced you to a couple of days ago. It comes from your Select Committee on School Facilities. The guts of the bill, primarily on page 2, and this is the bill that just calls for our school districts out there to incorporate a little bit more of a collaborative process. It's a bill that I think is a good one. It keeps plenty of flexibility there, but it keeps it encourages our district boards to involve the stakeholders in some of these major projects. And some of these projects are very, very critical to these communities. It's something that should take place, Mr. Chairman. You pointed out in committee, rightfully so, that this is something back when the bond issues used to be run, back before the state was building all of these buildings. I think communities maybe did a little better job of this. This is just the state encouraging the school boards, let's do this the right way, let's bring people in, do it right. So would encourage your favorable support.
Thank you, Senator Landon. Discussion on Senate File 3. Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 3, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 3 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Hooray. The next Senate file for your consideration is Senate File 84. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 84, sponsored by Senator Ross, Child Support Payments. An act relating to domestic relations and child support. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Schiffer, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the committee a whole rise and report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 84. To explain this good little bill, I yield the floor to Senator Ross.
Thank you. Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 84 is some cleanup language with regard to our child support collection system. The first section, 20-2-305, deals with abatements. Abatements mean that if you're the non-custodial parent and you have the child or children for more than 15 consecutive days during a month, you are entitled to an abatement of one half. The question is, how do you calculate that? We're having some difficulties along the way. And so because some months have less days, like February may have 28 or 29 days, we just went in on page 2 and figured out the abatement based on a calculation of 365 days during the year, so you know what the abatement is. I think the biggest part of this bill is 20-6-111. This deals with suspension of driver's licenses, and the purpose of this is that a lot of the non-custodial parents that aren't paying their child support are very delinquent, have kind of learned how to game the system a little bit. We do provide in statute for suspension of driver's license, and the current statute says it can be suspended as long as there hasn't been a payment for like 90 days. So what they do is they come in and they pay $5. So what we've changed that to is on line 19 that they have to at least make a full month of their child support payment to avoid their license being suspended. And then, of course, the last paragraph, the last section is with regards to the notice to payor. We have withholding orders that go out, and when the withholding orders go out, they go out to the payor, which is the employer. And we have some larger employers that want to have the notices come to them electronically. This authorizes that electronic notice and or by service or in writing, depending on what the payor wants. And that's the bill. It's a good little bill to help try to collect more of our child support that's due and owing out there.
Thank you, Mr. President. There are no amendments. Any discussion on Senate File 84? Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 84, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 84 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for your consideration is Senate File 85. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 85, sponsored by Senator Hicks. Trespassing to collect data, and act relating to crimes and offenses. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Hicks, and Schiffer. No, Senator Escobel, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the Senate file. Senator Schiffer, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 85, trespassing to collect data. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 85, standing committee amendment number 1, page 1, line 3.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the standing committee amendment and to carry this good little bill. I'll yield to its sponsor, Senator Hicks.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, what I'd like to do here is as we go through the bill is we'll just track the amendments in. They're relatively simple, so I think we can do that, and then we can dispose of the amendments. This carves out an additional category for criminal trespass. Under the current statutes of criminal trespass, the way the procedure works, if somebody's caught on your land, you have to provide them notification. If they leave, there's no trespass. What this does is says if you're trespassing on somebody's property for the sole purpose of collecting data, and we need to go through, if we start here, here's one of the provisions in here. If we go to page 1, line 1 that outlines this, This is where we're going to go in on line 15. I want to track in this amendment. So it's collecting data without legal authorization. That's the language that comes in with the amendment. There was some confusion where it just said without authorization. What it now will say, if we go to the amendment, it says without legal authority. That's a clarification that says if there's already a legal provision where it's through seismic bonding, existing statutes or laws or common law that gives you opportunity to access those lands, that you aren't in violation of that of this statute of criminal trespass under that act. Let's go over and flip over to page 2. This outlines the things that constitute the data that would be collected: geological, physical, biological data, including without limitations, photographs, written observations, electronically collected data, physical samples or specimens. Here's the key component of this thing. To be prosecuted under this act, as part of that data collection, it has to be demonstrated that you collected global positioning system data, specific geographic coordinates, or a legal description of that property. There's no reason that if you have that availability of technology that's publicly available, demonstrates that you should know that you're on somebody else's private property. We get down into the penalty phase here. There's another amendment that we want to track in. This is a little higher than what you would normally see under the existing criminal trespass codes. If we go to page 2, line 13, this sets out the penalties. The penalty is $1,000 and up to 1 year in prison. The amendment, if we track that in on page 2, line 13, adds after the word offense, and any subsequent offense. The provision there recaptures it, because if we go through this bill, the felony portion of this for a second offense was stricken from the bill. So Romanette 2 is gone. So what this effectively does, it says if you're caught for a subsequent offense, the penalty still remains up to $1,000 and a year in jail. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd stand for any questions.
Thank you, Senator Hicks. We are on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Any discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 85, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Back on the bill. Discussion on Senate File 85. Senator Anderson, 28.
Mr. Chairman, these photos that we're talking about, there are photographs from aerial positions, which some are 2.5 miles high, and they all have GPS. Is the maker thinking that we're going to fine everybody that takes a picture that has a GPS on it, which all those do?
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, if you read the bill, it says on page 1, line 15, if he enters or remains on or in the lands and premises of another person. It's specific to entering land, so if you're flying over an airspace, this isn't covered under this bill.
Thank you, Senator Hicks. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I confess I have some reservations about this bill. The Standing Committee Amendment cured some of them, but not all of them. I don't understand, Mr. Chairman, and I want to ask about the interrelationship here with the GPS. Are you guilty of an offense under this bill only if you're collecting data that can be identified through a GPS back to a specific location?
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Hicks.
GPS, which would be a UTM or a lateral longitude observation of that data point where that data was collected, or you had a legal description, which would be the township, section, range, quarter section of that nature. If you were collecting data and it included where that data was at, yes, you'd be guilty of that. But just because you've got a GPS in your hand doesn't necessarily mean that that was part of the data. I hope that answered your question.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, maybe. And I'll share my specific concern. The National Audubon Society takes a bunch of Christmas bird counts every year and attempts to count all the birds within a 15-mile diameter radius. So you have data that is specific to that. Actually, it's 7.5 miles diameter radius, 15-mile diameter, 15-mile diameter. It's a circle. So it's a specifically identified circle. I know in the case of Bates Hole, it's this, the center is located in the southeast corner of Section 1 of certain range and township. But it isn't located any specific property that's within that circle. It covers the whole circle. And Mr. Chairman, I participate in these things, and I guarantee when I'm doing the one in Casper, I go on people's private property, walk up their front walk to see what that bird was, and if they come out and object, they come out sometimes and ask what I'm doing. If anybody were to object, which has never happened, you know, okay, I get out of there. I'm concerned we're inadvertently making these people guilty of this high misdemeanor where they're not guilty under our existing trespass law. And that's my concern. So I want to know, is that GPS exemption going to get these hobbyists in trouble, or does it save them from trouble?
Thank you, Senator Scott. Back on the anti-Autobahn bill, Senate File 85, Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I would advise the good senator to Natrona County to not to admit that the crimes that he's committed in the past without legal counsel. I certainly would hate to have him jailed under the provision of this bill and not be able to attend the proceedings of this body. In fact, I've actually participated in those same Christmas counts, and typically where you wouldn't be in violation is you see a bird, or you're on a public right-of-way or public access or something, you record that location, because the proponents of this bill says you have to enter or remain on the premises of that property. Now, if you did do that, and you went out there without the permission of that landowner and collected biological data, species composition on those private properties, you recorded a GPS. Absolutely. And that's exactly what this bill is intended to do, because let's talk about the Christmas bird count. It doesn't say you can't collect endangered species data on somebody's property. So in that particular case, do we really want that data that there is endangered species on somebody's property residing in a public domain database? So unfortunately, it is not designed necessarily to capture those type of people, but it's certainly that activity that this bill is designed to curtail.
Thank you, Senator Hicks. Further discussion, Senator Von Flader.
I have a question for the sponsor. I'm trying to figure it out. Page 16, page 1, line 16, where it says premises of another person, is that just legal jargon that means the person that you're unauthorized to be on the property of, or can that be construed that you'd be on somebody's next door, like a seismograph, they can shoot across the property to get their readings? You may not have permission for the middle property, but you could have permission to be on each side of it. And I just want to make sure that that doesn't say somehow it's illegal to be on the one you have legal right to be on because you're gathering data off the one in between, because that's how a seismograph could work. That may just be legal jargon. I don't know.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions before the sponsor rises? Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, again, the way it reads, it said you'd have to enter on and remain on that property. So if you had legal authority, whether it be through a bonding action or some other legal action to be on there, you're not covered under this. You're exempted, so you're protected.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Hearing none, hearing the question called for, all those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 85, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Senate File 85 has very hesitantly and unconvincingly passed the Committee of the Whole. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 42. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 42, sponsored by Senator Geis, Electrical Licensing Installation of Light Bulbs, an act relating to electrical licensing. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agricultural, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, Hicks, and Johnson. Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the Senate file. Senator Geis, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rises and report, I move Senate File 42 and ask a favorable vote on it. We started out with a different bill, but we really mellowed this one down. On page 1, line 7-8, we deleted that part. Then on section 1, statute 359123A, Roman numeral 8, little e, is amended to read. And then this other part from page 7, or on line 7, page 2, line 5 through 8, we delete and insert. This is all old language that's already in the statute from line 9 down to line 21. And then in line 21 under little e, it says routine repair or maintenance of light fixtures limited to replace of, and we struck lamps and left the balusters and fixtures in there. So now you can change the light bulbs and everything and not be guilty.
Senator Geis, I'm going to have that amendment read in and ask for you to move it after it's read in, if you would.
Yeah, we better.
Senate File 42, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 7.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate File 42, Standing Commitment Number 1, and if you want me to repeat it, I can, or if not, we'll just vote on it.
Senator Geis, I think we remember the amendments, and we appreciate the motion on it. Thank you. All right. Any discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 42? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 42 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Committee of the Whole, back on the bill. Any discussion on Senate File 42? Senator Case.
Chairman, I just wonder if the 10-year felony is still in this bill.
Thank you, Senator Case. Any further discussion? All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 42, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 42 has passed Committee of the Whole. That is the end of our list. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to do Senate File 66. The water bill, but Senator Schiffer says he won't stay and listen, which means you just got to listen to him next week. I move that we rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Mr. President.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general files, begged leave to report as follows. Senate File 48 do pass. Senate File 63 do pass. Senate File 16 do pass. Senate File 33 do pass. Senate File 45 do pass. Senate File 57 do pass. Senate File 58, do pass amended. Senate File 70, do pass amended. Senate File 72, do pass. Senate File 78, do pass. Senate File 103, do pass. Senate File 81, do pass. Senate File 56, do pass. Senate File 3, do pass. Senate File 84, do pass. Senate File 85, do pass amended. Senate File 42, do pass amended. Senator Hastert and Raffus, Chairman.
Senator Raffus.
I move for adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's been adopted, and the report is now adopted. We have messages from the House.
February the 14th, 2014, from the House of Representatives. Third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 7, Unlawful Entry into Occupied Structures. Ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill Number 22, Mineral Tax Audit Interest Rate. Ayes 54, noes 1, excused 1. House Bill Number 24, Registration Fees, House Trailers. Ayes 56, noes 3, excused 1. And House Bill Number 40, State Employees and Official Groups Insurance Membership. Ayes 51, noes 8, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 14th, 2014. Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 30, Compensation for Persons Exonerated Based on DNA Evidence. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 14th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred Senate File 67, Administrative Rules Streamlining, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Kraft, Nicholas Roth, and Rotha, Senator Ross, Chairman. February 14, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred Senate File 68, Obsolete Laws, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Kraft, Nicholas, Ross, and Rotha, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, is there anything else? Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, you just read in Senate File 30, Compensation of Persons Exonerated Based on DNA Evidence. Barring objection, that has an appropriation in it. I would request it be referred to Committee Number 2.
Senate File 30 will be referred to Committee Number 2 without objection. Now, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I move that we stand adjourned until 10 a.m. on Monday. That'd be February 17th.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, may I have permission for the floor?
You may.
Members of the Senate, we are very blessed to have a great young lady in our presence. This is Jessica Leach. She is a senior at Sherman High School. She was the vice president of the FBLA chapter there, a member of the National Honor Society. She was our girls' state of the FBLA last year. And she is a member of the People's State of the Champions, State Champion team. She doesn't know that, but she has been a marketing letter to swimming for the last 3 years. Very active in the church. She is qualified for the honor of the program of 22 University Boyhood. So, having said that, Mr. Chairman, the Senator, are you ready for your question?
Yes.
All those in favor of Senator Barnard's motion to win the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it is someone with a very favorable recommendation that Jessica Lynch, your official Senate Valentine, please say
aye. Any further announcements? Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Monday morning at 8 a.m. in the normal committee room. We'll continue our work on Senate File 89, Health Professionals Medicaid Billing. We'll do Senate File 96, Workforce Services Independent Contractors. And I'll advise the committee members there is the draft amendment is now on the desks up in the Senate committee room. And we'll take up Senate File 53 on fair trade practices.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 2 appropriations will meet Monday, February 17th, 15 minutes after adjournment in room S11 to discuss the following Senate files. Senate File 100, Business Ready Community Program Modifications, and Senate File 30, Compensation for Persons Exonerated Based on DNA Evidence. That's a re-referral. And, Mr. President, your committee number 12 rules will meet Tuesday, February 18th on noon recess, room S5, to discuss the following Senate files, Senate File 106, State Education Administration, and Senate File 11, Appropriations for the Legislature. And, Mr. President, we are going to start the budget bill on Monday. We're going to divide committee of the whole for questions over 2 days, Monday and Tuesday. You all have the appropriations bill that's been passed out. You also have in your stack of material a summary of that for your review. The appropriations bill has been divided up between the 5 members of the Senate Appropriations Committee. They will present their portions of the bill. It will take 2 days. Wednesday will be the day for second reading amendments. Off Thursday, and your amendments have to be in for Friday, which is third reading by, I think, 5 o'clock on Thursday. Be sure and check that for the amendments, and we will do the third reading on the appropriations bill on Friday and have a final vote. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your committee number 1 judiciary will meet on Monday, February 17th at 8 a.m. in S1 to take up Senate File 31, 24/7 Sobriety Program, Senate File 34, Involuntary Hospitalization Emergency Hearings, and Senate File 40, Involuntary Hospitalization and Treatment.
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet Monday upon adjournment or 10 minutes or so in room S14 to discuss Senate File 86, Obstructing Roads and Highways, Senate File 101, License Plate Vehicle Indicator. Thank you.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, your committee number 9 will meet Monday, 15 minutes after the noon recess. We will meet in the Hershler Building, room B63, and take up Senate File 82, 2014 Large Project Funding, and Senate File 83, Oil and Gas Operations Bonding Requirements.
Further announcements? Hearing none. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's been adopted. The Senate will stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, February 17th.